You're listening to the Deal Farm Podcast with Ken Corsini. Educating, inspiring, and connecting you to real estate deals. And now, your host, Ken Corsini.
Hey, this is Ken Corsini with the Deal Farm. On today's Best Deal Ever episode, I'm joined by Alex Pardo of FlipEmpire.com and the Flip Empire podcast. He's also the founder of Creative Real Estate Solutions, which has done over 300 transactions in Miami, Florida alone. He's an investor. He's an entrepreneur. He's also a real estate coach. He really knows his stuff. I'm super excited to have him on the show. So, Alex, welcome to the show.
Hey, man, I'm super excited to be on. Thank you. I look forward to to delivering value and connecting with you and your audience.
Well, man, I'm glad to have you on. I was actually thrilled to be on your podcast as well, the Flip Empire podcast.
Yeah, man, it's awesome. Thank you for jumping on. I know people are really going to enjoy the show and everything you provided.
So you're down in Miami, man, probably enjoying some warm weather right now, aren't you?
Love the warm weather, man. Love it. Yeah, so if you're ever in town, man, let me know and drinks are on me.
There you go. Hey, so are you originally from Miami?
Yeah, born and raised. I mean, my entire family's from Cuba, so my sister and I are the only ones that were born here in Miami. My parents came, I think, in the late 60s or maybe early 60s. But yeah, I was born here in Miami.
Awesome. Very cool. So you run a big-time wholesaling business out of Miami, but before you got into real estate, talk about what you were doing, because I know you have a very similar story to mine.
Yeah, man. So, you know, it's funny. Growing up as a kid, I always felt like I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. And it started with going to like baseball card trade shows with my dad. And I'd buy boxes of baseball cards and I'd end up like basically flipping them to my friends. And I didn't realize that was called wholesaling. And I had no clue that you could wholesale real estate. And, you know, when I was in college, I started getting intrigued by real estate. So I picked up Rich Dad Poor Dad, which I'm sure nice. Probably everybody's read out there.
Yep.
But, you know, at the same time, I always felt like I saw myself kind of like as a CEO or a CFO of a Fortune 500 company. And at that time, my goal was to, you know, climb that corporate ladder, so to speak. So I started interviewing with a lot of like the Fortune 100 companies, and I ended up landing a job with General Electric in their consumer finance program. And it was basically a 6-month program. It was a 2-year program where every 6 months they would rotate me in a different area of finance and accounting within GE. And I was so excited to get that job. I was making $50,000 a year out of college. I was 22 years old, and I thought that was like all the money in the world, right?
Sure.
And Ken, dude, I'll never forget, man. It was like 3 months into the job and we're at quarter ends. And if you guys are – if nobody's in the finance world or in the corporate world, quarter end is when you got to like close the books. Mm-hmm. And at this point, I was averaging like 70 to 80 hours a week, and my eyes were just getting cross-eyed from looking at Excel and PowerPoint. And it was like Friday night, and I had moved to Atlanta. Coincidentally, I know that's where
oh,
you are.
Interesting. But
I was in the Sandy Springs area. So. Yeah. I was in Atlanta, man, and I remember I had friends texting me and calling me that they were going out, and this was like 9 o'clock at night on a Friday, and I was still looking at Excel, and I'm like, there has to be more to life because I'm miserable. Like, I just did not enjoy what I was doing, and that was kind of like the fork in the road for me. I said to myself, you know what? I made a commitment to GE. I'm going to finish out the 2-year program, but after that 2 years, I'm going to move back to Miami, and I'm going to start a business. I wasn't sure what that was going to be, but I knew that I was going to start a business. And so throughout the 2 years, I started just connecting with people. And I got into learning more about real estate. I bought Carlton Sheets, No Money Down.
Nice.
And I thought that was, you know, assuming a loan and like all this stuff was, I thought that was real estate. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to get back to Miami and I'm going to start assuming all these loans. Little did I know, right? So it's funny. I look back at that and I kind of laugh.
Well, you know, it's funny. Yeah, Carlton Sheets was that was my impetus to get into real estate too, was that No Money Down course that I literally bought at a garage sale for like 10 bucks.
That's awesome. Well, man, you got a much better deal than me. I think I paid like $300 for the course,
right.
But whatever. So I'm so fortunate that I got in contact with that because it really opened my eyes to what real estate could be, right? So I finished the 2-year program. I moved back to Miami and I wasn't sure what I was going to do. And I said, you know what? When am I going to be at a point in my life where I could travel? I've always enjoyed traveling. So I literally went backpacking around Europe and parts of Africa with my friends for 3 months.
Wow.
It was me and two other guys. And I was partying in Ibiza. This was August 2005. And I got an email from a friend of mine that was inviting me to a seminar. It was called a boot camp at the time, Marketing for Deals. A guy by the name of Dave Lindahl, who's big into apartment investing, he was putting on a boot camp in Atlanta, and it was $997. Now, at this point, Ken, you got to kind of like think about the fact that I had been traveling for 3 months. I was basically financing this whole thing on a credit card. I was in debt. I had no money. I didn't have a job. But something told me that I had to make a move. I wasn't sure what it was going to be. So I put the $997 on my credit card. I got back a couple of weeks later from Ibiza, and I attended that boot camp in October. Long story short, man, I took out one of the pre-foreclosure letters that we had gotten in the binder, and I sent out a direct mail campaign. I ended up landing a deal, and 60 days later, close to 60 days later, I closed, and we made $44,000 in the deal, which was almost as much as I was making in my corporate job. And like, I literally have not looked back ever since.
Wow. You know, I hear so many stories about first deals going sideways. Your first deal was a home run, man. You were hooked, it sounds like.
Yeah, man. And it's funny because it was a short sale and I was like stumbling my way through the process. I was like super scared. At one point, I wanted to like just bail from the deal. Like, it, this deal was so hairy. But yeah, it was a home run. And it took about 2 months to close. But once I got a taste of the fact that I could do this and I was working out of my bedroom at my parents' house, like that's, I was embarrassed. I mean, I was like 24, 25. I had moved back to Miami. I didn't have any money. So I went back to my parents' house and I started this business out of the bedroom that I pretty much grew up in. And yeah, man, it's just been, you know, it's been a ride since then. I mean, don't get me wrong. I've lost money on deals. I've had challenges along the way, but I think I sent out about 1,000 postcards, and I was fortunate enough that I was able to land a deal from that first campaign.
Yeah, no doubt. So this was, and this was a postcard that you had gotten at a boot camp that you had been at just prior.
Well, it was a letter, but it was kind of like the letter didn't have much like copy on it. So I call it a postcard, but it was an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, and I hand wrote it, you know, because I just tore it out of the manual and it was like faded and kind of ugly. So I just hand wrote the letter. I didn't know anything about yellow letters or handwriting. I mean, I did not know anything about this business other than what I had learned through Carlton Sheets and that seminar. I just knew the biggest takeaway that I got from that boot camp was marketing. You know, you got to market to generate leads. And I just kind of figured things out along the way, really.
Yeah. Unbelievable. So you hand wrote 1,000 letters.
Yes. Yes. I hand wrote 1,000 letters.
Well, it paid off, man. Best time you ever spent writing those letters.
It did, man. Definitely.
So how did your business evolve from then? So you land a $40,000 deal. You're hooked. You're living in your parents' house. What does that look like for you over the last so many years?
Yeah, so great question, man. So, I mean, my business has evolved in a couple different ways. I mean, you know, obviously the market kind of came tumbling down in 2008. And I lost quite a bit of money on a couple of deals. And fortunately, like, those are really the only two deals I've lost money on. But yeah, you know, I was doing all kinds of deals. I was doing seller finance deals, lease purchase deals, wholesaling. I got into a few rehabs. So my business didn't really have, like, I wasn't sure what the DNA of my business was, right? Like, so when I look back at all those deals I did back then, I was just kind of flying by the seat of my pants. I mean, I wasn't working off of a CRM. You know, I remember I was literally, I had these like seller lead sheets. I'd print out like 100 every single week. And I was on the phone with sellers. And I remember writing down the information on these papers. So I wasn't really operating like a business, except that I knew that it was kind of sink or swim. Like, I had to make it happen. So I did all these deals, and 2008 came, and obviously the market, you know, came kind of tumbling down. And I got fortunate that even though I lost some money, it wasn't anything that crippled me or my business. But I just kind of realized back then that, you know, you had to keep an eye on the market cycles, and you had to, you know, zig when people were zagging. You know, and it's not a one size fits all. I always say you have to really kind of adjust with the times. So in 2009, I want to say, is I picked up the 4-hour work week. That's when I first got exposed to virtual assistants. I hired my first virtual assistant. I hired a second. And then in 2012, I realized that, you know, wholesaling was a great business, but it's a transactional business. Like, you don't get paid unless you do a deal, right? So I was like, how can I automate the wholesaling business? And what I came up with was, I'm going to start building a team, and I'm going to start taking hats off of my head. So at that time, you know, Ken, as you know, man, when you get started, you're doing everything. You're wearing all the hats in your business. And mm-hmm. I also read the E-Myth. And so I literally followed that plan. I wrote out an org chart. I wrote my name in all these different boxes. And then the first person I hired aside from the virtual assistant was somebody to start processing all of the leads that were coming in from my campaigns. Because, you know, you and I talked about this on my podcast where I remember specifically I'd be out on a date or I'd be out with family or friends and my cell phone was getting blown up with all these calls. And it was just such an inconvenience to have to stop what I was doing and, like, you know, try to, like, process the lead. So, yeah, man, I hired a lead manager. I ended up hiring a second lead manager. And now basically my business is we're a team of six. I got two lead managers, two acquisitions people, a dispositions manager, and a transaction coordinator that run the wholesaling operation here in South Florida.
And so is your primary business at this? It's all wholesaling. Do you do any fix and flip? Do you do anything else, or is it all wholesaling?
Yeah, the last couple of years, it's been all wholesaling. And we're keeping an eye out for potential buy and hold opportunities. But, yeah, I'd probably say 98% of our business right now is wholesaling.
So the team of – so you're almost exclusively focused on acquiring. That is the one – awesome thing about wholesaling. It's like you just got to become an acquisition machine where, you know, we do mostly fix and flip. So we have to be really good at acquiring, but then we also have to be really good at fixing and selling. Oh, yeah. So our team's a little bit bigger just because we have to have more parts built in to do that. But I
that's right.
You know, I know a lot of folks too that have been in the fix and flip, they've been in the turnkey space, and they've said, forget it. I'm just going into wholesaling because it's so much simpler. All I got to do is focus on acquiring, and there's almost always going to be a buyer if you acquire right.
That's right. And you know what? For me, man, I think one of the key takeaways that I'd like to share with your audience is know yourself and know what you enjoy. I know for me, like in 2006 and 2007, I did like three or four rehabs and it wasn't – we made a lot of money, but it wasn't for me. I didn't really enjoy the process. Now, a big part of that was probably the fact that I didn't have systems in place and I was – like I said, I was just kind of winging it. I was just making things happen. But I didn't really enjoy the process too much, and wholesaling was something I was always kind of drawn to. So while you can make a lot more money with fix and flip, just it's a great business model. But just know if that's something that you enjoy doing. And like I always say, you know, we talked about it on my show, is life is too short. Figure out what you enjoy and then kind of outsource the rest. Yeah. So, yeah, man, wholesaling has kind of always been our bread and butter. But like I said, it's a transactional business, you know, so try to figure out how you can replace yourself in all the different things you're doing within your business. And that's what I realized in 2012 is that I needed to start bringing people on board so that I wasn't meeting with sellers. I wasn't marketing for cash buyers. I wasn't, you know, managing the file once it got to the title company and working with them. So think about how you can start replacing yourself in your business.
I cannot agree more with you. And it's what, like we talked about in your podcast, it's what's your time worth. If you can pay somebody $10 an hour to do the job, but you're doing it yourself, then you've effectively created a job for yourself at 10 bucks an hour if you're still doing it.
Exactly.
So find somebody else to plug in. Hey, to that point, I'm curious, and you don't have to get into too much detail, because I'm sure there's people out there that are doing it themselves that want to plug in people and aren't sure how to compensate them. Is your model more of like an hourly? Do you have like a bonus structure? Do you have a commission structure? How do you sort of slice up the pie?
Yeah, great question. And I've made quite a few mistakes along the way. So it really depends on the position, at least for me. And just understand that there's different compensation structures and models. So what I'm about to share with you is not necessarily the right way or even the way that you should go. But this is kind of what I have found works for me. So for my acquisitions and my disposition managers, it's I pay them 15% of the net on the deals that they're involved in and that they bring in. So any properties that my acquisitions managers acquire, whether it's from the MLS, working with an agent, or from, you know, our direct mail campaigns, if they go and they bring it in, they meet with the seller or they work with the agent, they're getting 15%. And then what I've done is I like to incentivize my team. So if we – when I first started bringing on an acquisitions managers and sales managers, I would say, okay, well, let's base the compensation structure on certain number of deals that we would do per month. And that was a huge mistake because there'd be some months where we might close four or five deals, but our average profit on those deals were like $7,000, $8,000, $9,000, mm-hmm. right? So I switched and I said, okay, well, forget about deals. Let's do it based on the revenue generated for the month. Mm-hmm. So if you're interested in bringing people on, what I would recommend you do is base it off of certain revenue goals that you want to hit for that month. So, for example, let's say you decide to pay an acquisitions manager 15% of the net. That could be up to $20,000 or $25,000 that you generate for that month. But once you get over into the next tier, maybe their percentage goes up to 18 or 20%.
Yep.
But another thing, Ken, that I made a mistake on is that I didn't back in the numbers and I didn't factor in the overhead, right? So I remember the first acquisitions manager, I was paying him 25%. And then I quickly realized that I didn't have much of the pie left to bring on other people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just make sure before you start hiring people to kind of back in the numbers, know what your overhead is, know what you're spending on marketing. And at that time, I was even paying 25% of the gross. I wasn't even factoring out direct mail expenses and some of these other things.
Well, that was going to be my next question, is how do you determine your net? Do you actually put a cost for that specific campaign into that net calculation?
Yeah, so I don't overcomplicate it. If the deal came from a particular direct mail campaign, I'll just take a look at what was spent on that specific campaign. So I won't factor in the fact that it may be the third or the fourth follow-up, because I don't want to eat up too much into the acquisition manager's compensation. Mm-hmm. So I'll just factor out what was spent on that particular campaign. And then when it comes to my lead managers and my virtual assistants, I pay them hourly. So I pay one lead manager gets paid $7 an hour and the other one gets paid $8 an hour.
Dang, where are you finding people for $7 an hour? In Miami. Yeah. None of them are legal.
Yeah, our market is very Hispanic driven. So, you know, out of most of the leads that come in, either they're bilingual or they speak Spanish. Right?
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So I realized, I remember the first lead manager I hired only spoke English, and there was a bottleneck because I would have to jump on the phone with the people that only spoke Spanish.
Interesting. Yeah.
So I started targeting at the time, I think it was Odesk, and now it's I'm drawing a blank, Upwork.
Okay.
Upwork.com. And so I just started targeting South America, and I found that the first lead manager I hired in Colombia was $3 an hour, and then throughout the years, now he's up to $8 an hour.
So your lead manager is virtual. So and what is that lead manager doing, taking incoming calls?
Correct. Yeah. So we run everything in Podio, and we have, you know, I'm pretty big into systems and automation. So we have it set up so that when a lead comes in, it goes directly to his Skype number. And if for whatever reason he doesn't pick up, the lead still gets populated inside of our Seller Leads app. And then a task is created for them. But yeah, I have everything set up so that it goes to their Skype number. And if the first one doesn't pick up, it'll, you know, I use CallRail, so it'll just go to the second one. Mm-hmm. But either way, the lead is getting populated in Podio, and a task is being created for them to make sure to follow up on that lead.
That, you were the first person I've talked to who's outsourced their actual incoming calls to a virtual assistant.
That's really?
Yes, that's really interesting. Because, I mean, you've got the handful of people that use, what's that service where you get a live operator? Pat Live.
Oh, man, it did not work out for me. It's over the last year, I used to go directly to a 24-hour recorded voicemail, mm-hmm. and it used to work, but I found that we were spinning our wheels so much playing phone tag and trying to reconnect with people. Mm-hmm. And then about 8-9 months ago, I went to Pat Live, and that was just – it just did not – I don't want to say anything negative. It just didn't work out for us. And then I said, you know what? You guys are going to take the calls live, and now we're able to connect with so many more homeowners because when they call, it's going directly to their Skype number.
That's so interesting. Has that been tricky to manage? Because now you've got somebody in Colombia that you're expecting to answer calls. Maybe are they even in the same time zone?
Yeah, they're in the same time zone. But no, it really hasn't been tricky. That was actually one of my hang-ups with kind of going to this system. So the way I have it set up, Ken, is it'll go to the first lead manager's Skype number. It'll ring twice. If that person doesn't pick up by the end of the second ring, it'll go to my second lead manager for another two rings. And if they don't pick up, then it goes to a recording where they can hear, you know, more about – I used to have this like 2 to 3 minute recording that would tell them all about what we did. Now it's a very simple personal, like, you know, hi, thanks for calling. You know, if you're calling about a postcard you received or a letter, you know, please leave your name, number, the address, and we'll get back to you as soon as possible. Just very kind of straightforward. Mm-hmm. But we're not losing any leads because through CallRail, we have it set up where, like I said, all these leads are going into Podio. And then we're following up after it for whatever reason the lead managers don't connect with the seller.
I gotcha. And so you've just trained your VAs. Here's how the conversation needs to go. Here are the questions you need to ask. And they're just more of an intake then at that point?
Exactly. Yeah. Their job is to, you know, to collect all the information. We have the script embedded in the Seller Leads app and Podio. And really, I'm not wanting them to negotiate with the person. Their job is identify motivation. So if the person sounds like they're motivated and they need to sell, set up an appointment. You know, don't focus so much on price and what they're looking for, but if there's motivation, set up an appointment for the acquisitions person, because I want to get them in front of the seller. And I've always found that you can close somebody a lot easier, kind of belly to belly. And then if there's no motivation, we're going to go ahead and send them a signed offer. So, you know, through technology, we have it set up that, you know, you input a handful of fields, you click a button, and Podio will just email them a signed offer.
So if they sound motivated, you're sending somebody for a live appointment. If they don't sound motivated, bam, just send out a contract. I like it, man.
Exactly.
Yeah,
yep.
That's cool. I'm taking notes because I really like the way you've got this set up. That's very cool.
Oh, cool, man.
And the fact that you're using somebody out of the country to pick up. You know, I can almost see us doing something like that as a backup. Because it calls our office first and then goes to voicemail. But it'd be interesting to have, if somebody in our office didn't pick up, maybe to go to a VA as a secondary. Yeah. And then if they don't pick up, then you go to voicemail.
How we stumbled on that was PatLive. I thought PatLive was going to work fantastic. And it just, for several reasons, it didn't. But I thought to myself, well, if the 24-hour recorded is not working and then PatLive, it's just for all these different reasons, it's not working. I said, we really need to figure out how to take these calls live right off the bat. But then I, you know, talking with it through my team, I said, we definitely got to have a backup because, you know, what happens? I don't want this lead to get lost. So that's how we kind of like came upon this. And it's for the last maybe, what, 5-6 months, it's been working really well.
That's very cool. Very interesting. So so really quick, I know we're getting towards the end. I'm curious, what marketing's working for you right now? What campaign or campaigns do you find or you're having the most success with?
Yeah, so we're doing like 3 or 4 different marketing campaigns. We have direct mail. You know, we have one of our virtual assistants is just responsible for going to gosection8.com for Zillow rent ads and contacting sellers and sending offers. We have a post-it notes campaign going on, and then we also have some pay-per-click stuff going on as well. If I kind of look at the 80-20 rule, direct mail and going specifically at MLS deals with agents is what's producing most of our deals. We haven't done that much off of pay-per-click, partially because our budget just hasn't gotten ramped up. One of the things I realized in South Florida is if you're interested in pay-per-click, definitely know your market, because a couple $1,000s a month might not even get your foot in the door if you're in a very competitive market.
Yep.
Direct mail, we're still getting a lot of our deals from direct mail. We just realized that, you know, one of the mistakes I see people make is that they send out 1, 2, maybe 3 campaigns. For us, we try to send 4 to 7 campaigns. So every 30 to 60 days, we're rehitting that list with a different piece.
And so what lists are working for you? What lists are you targeting right now?
Yeah, so we're hitting tax defaults. That's working out well for us. We're doing owner-occupied and non-owner-occ. But one of the things that we're trying to do is really leverage filters, right? So everybody, a lot of people know that, you know, when we looked at all the deals we closed, most of these homeowners were over the age of 55 years old. So one of the filters that we'll add is 55-plus years of age. We know that rather than trying to hit our entire city with the budget that we have, we've identified what are our hot zip codes, and we focus primarily on about 22 zip codes in the South Florida market, and we try to get the most out of that. So we know that whenever a lead comes in, this is where all the cash buyer activity is happening. You know, we focus on properties between 1,000 square feet and 2,500 square feet, and now we're able to really drill down and get a very focused list. So one of the things I like to share with people is that, you know, if you don't have a big marketing budget and that's a concern for you, figure out what are the hot zip codes in your market and then drill down so you get a very target-focused list of maybe a couple thousand records. And then now just make sure that you can hit these people over and over every 30 to 60 days.
So how long will you hit one list? Will you hit it for a full year, 2 years?
Yeah, so it's about a year to year and a half. So We've kind of tested different things. Before, we used to hit them every 30 days. We tried every 90 days. 60 days is about the sweet spot, and we won't hit a list less than 4 times. But on average, we're hitting them 6 to 7 times. So, yeah, it ends up being about a year or so.
Yeah. Gotcha. That's killer, man. So you've been at this a long time, similar to me. I'm curious, is there one deal in particular that stands out as your best deal ever?
You know, I always say kind of the last deal is the best one, you know, because I try not to take things for granted. But I remember we closed a deal. I want to say this was maybe 7-8 months ago. We made 71K on the deal. And our average profit per transaction is last year was about $12,700 a deal. One of the things I challenged my team with earlier this year was how can we expect to make more on every deal? So we're hovering at about 20K a deal. So this one is over three times what we typically make on a deal. And the reason I say it's my best deal is I don't have this like horror story of like all these pitfalls and like watch out for this. I say it's my best deal because I wasn't involved in any part of the process. I didn't speak to the seller. I didn't see the home. Like my team basically handled 95% of it.
Nice.
And I say it's my best deal because, you know, I always think about that one deal. And I said, if this can happen on this deal, it should be happening on every deal. And that's constantly what I'm pushing and striving for.
That's not, yeah, that's a, you sort of hit that point of realization. Man, I just made 70 grand and I almost did nothing for it because I'd put the systems and the people and the processes in place to take this down. And that's a darn good feeling.
That's right. Yeah, it feels great, man.
That's very cool. Alex, man, this has been an awesome interview. Now, if we want to steer people to your podcast or your website, where can we send them?
Yeah, man, I appreciate that. So, yeah, I have a podcast called The Flip Empire Show. If you guys want to check it out, just go to flipempire.com. And then we do two shows a week. We do a master class on Mondays, and then we'll do a shorter Q&A call. So if you have any questions, if you need me to answer anything, just go to flipempire.com and click on the Ask Alex. Just submit your question, and I'd be happy to feature it in an upcoming show.
Awesome. Alex, this was a fantastic interview. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Ken. Appreciate you having me on, man.
Take care.
Take care.
Hey folks, it's Ken again, and I want to talk to you for just a quick second about becoming a private lender with our company, Georgia Residential Partners. If you've got money right now sitting on the sidelines, maybe it's in a bank account earning less than 1%, or maybe it's in the stock market and you're worried about where the stock market is headed, you might want to consider becoming a private lender with our company. Where you might be getting 1% to 2% on a CD or a money market account right now, when you become a private lender with us, you're actually well into the double digits in terms of return on investment. Again, if you've got money that's not working for you right now, it's sitting on the sidelines, and you want to get it into investment that's safe, that's passive, and has the opportunity to get you well into the double digits, please reach out to me. You can actually contact us through our website at dealfarm.net. Go to the Contact Us page. It goes right into my inbox, and I will reply and set up a time to talk. Thanks so much for listening to The Deal Farm. We'll see you in the next episode. Take care.